or certain respectable sins that seem to go unnoticed in our lives. We can become so preoccupied with the major sins of society that we lose sight of the need to deal with our own sin. That's where we're at this morning, right? Respectable sins. We talked about some the last couple of weeks, and this morning I want to share a story that might give you a little hint into what we're going to talk about this morning together. And if you're looking at the outline or the handout you already know, just pretend like you don't know, all right? Let's just enjoy the moment together. A few weeks ago, I had the opportunity to go with our Wednesday night Connect group. The guys from that group, we decided to go fishing. And so here's a picture of us fishing. It's a ragtag group. Literally everything I have on is borrowed from someone else. So I'm not really great at the river fishing, but we went down to Cherokee and fished there in the little rivers and the streams there in Cherokee. And our group had a great time. And for one of the people in our group, Dennis, my good friend, had never been fishing before in his life. And so he gets out there, and about an hour into the fishing time, Dennis catches this. A monster of a fish. First time. In fact, just to give you like an idea of what the rest of us were catching, here's a picture of what the others of us caught. All these little fish. Dennis is out there an hour. First time ever fishing in his entire life, and he catches that monster of a fish. And Brandon's my good buddy. We lead a Connect group together on Wednesday nights, and Brandon gave me permission to share this, but Brandon has been fishing his entire life, right? Like, since he was a little kid, Brandon loves to fish. He fishes many times a year. And in this moment, I talked to Brandon about it. In this moment, Brandon felt something. Because Brandon had never caught a fish like that. And I'll be honest with you, for the moment there, like what was weird is like 30 minutes after this, I catch a decent one. It's probably one of those little ones you see there. I catch one. But for those 30 minutes, I'm very, very happy for Dennis. But I'm feeling something. And we all know what it is that I'm feeling because you felt it as well. Today we're talking about a parasitic sin that rises up out of the shadows of our heart and mind. Its goal is to isolate you from all of your relationships. And once it gets its fangs in you, it infects you with a thirst and a hunger for what others have. And it's been terrorizing relationships since the beginning of time. Cain and Abel, Esau and Jacob, Leah and Rachel, Joseph and his older brothers, the 12 disciples, even Woody and Buzz Lightyear. The respectable sin of jealousy. Jealousy. Another word that sometimes you get heard here is envy. And there is actually a little bit of a difference between jealousy and envy. But for the sake and purposes of this morning, we're all kind of lumping it into this one respectable sin we want to call jealousy. So if you have your Bibles, turn to 1 Samuel 18. Last week and this week, we're looking at the life of Saul and looking at King Saul's life. And what we know about King Saul is last week we talked about how Saul is an impatient person. But he's not only an impatient person, Saul was a jealous person as well. He's a jealous person. And last week we looked at his failure of impatience caused the prophet Samuel to look for another man to be king. And Samuel found that guy. He found David. And David, when he was anointed, was a young man, a very young man, probably maybe even a boy. And a lot of us know what David is famous for. One of the main successes of David's life is even as a young man, David went up against the giant Goliath. And so we're in 1 Samuel 18, but in 1 Samuel 17, that story happens. David against Goliath, a young boy with a sling and some rocks against a warrior, and David winds up winning. And so this is where we find the people of Israel on the cusp or on the end of that big win. And you can imagine David is pretty popular at this point. Saul even began to use David almost to rally the troops. He kind of set him up as like a mascot for the army of Israel. Everyone was looking to David as the inspiration, and Saul was just using him for that, right? Now, here's what we don't know. We don't know at this point whether Saul knew that David was going to be the anointed king of Israel. We don't know that. And I'll be honest, I think he probably didn't know at this point, because look at what Saul does here. Look in verse 5 of chapter 18. 1 Samuel 18, verse 5 says this. Whatever mission Saul sent him on, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the troops and Saul's officers as well. So everyone's happy. And then comes verse 6. When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, Goliath, the women came out from all the towns of Israel to meet King Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs and with tambourines and harps. As they danced, they sang, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his tens of thousands. Now, before we read another word in this story, we all can feel the tension, can't we? Like, we know exactly what's happening. The minute that little song hits the ears of Saul, he had a choice. He had a choice to be confident and secure in who he was, or he had the choice to be jealous, to be envious, to start down a cycle of jealousy that's going to wind up playing out in his life. And we kind of know what he's going to choose. You and I have that same choice. Think about this. Every time we see something or hear something that tempts us to be jealous, we have a choice. It's not just some reaction that we don't have control over. Every one of us in this room, when we see something or hear something that tempts us to be jealous, we have a choice to either be content or to start down a cycle of jealousy. Jealousy is a cycle that starts. It starts with this: unfair comparisons. Unfair comparisons. In that moment, Saul begins to entertain that comparison in his mind. He's thinking, thousands, tens of thousands. Thousands, tens of thousands. We're tempted to do the same thing, right? We're tempted with the same types of comparisons. For some of you in the room, maybe you're single. Maybe you're a single person in the room, and maybe your temptation is to hear about the next couple that's happily newly married. You've got 8 bridesmaids' dresses in your closet and no wedding dress. Or maybe it's for you parents, right? You got that friend whose kids seem to excel in everything. Like, they're the straight-A student, the star athlete. They never seem to disrespect their parents. They never seem to show any signs of immaturity. They're always polite when you're around them. And you begin to compare what they have with what you have. Maybe it's those friends that get that brand new car. Or go on that great vacation that you've always wanted to go on. Or that surprise inheritance that your friends just got. It feels like they are living the life that you think you deserve. That's what jealousy is. Comparison, you've heard this before, comparison is the thief of joy. It's the thief of joy. And here's how this works. Right now, you might be super thankful for the house that you live in. You might love your house. You might love the way your kitchen's set up and the way your living room's set up and your bedrooms. And you've got just this great bathroom that you can go have peace from your family at times. You got it, right? And you're very happy with that. Until your friend gets that Joanna Gaines farmhouse that you've always wanted with the shiplap, right? And then all of a sudden, you're not so happy with the bathroom that you got. Comparison. Often we compare not just those things, often we compare our worst moments with others' highlight reels. Some of you are on social media, you know exactly what I'm talking about. We think about our moment, our negative situation we might find ourselves in, our meltdown child, our tough situation at work. Maybe it's even the food we're eating. We look at it and we're like, wow, I wish I could have what this person has. Like they've just posted a picture of them at some fancy brunch and they've got avocado toast with a hint of saffron. And I'm sitting there with my Oscar Mayer bologna sandwich with Walmart bread and Aldi mustard. We feel it, don't we? We feel it in the big things like houses, and we feel it even in the little things like literally comparing our food. We accentuate things we hate about ourselves and obsess over things others have that we don't. Jealousy, this is so important for us to remember. Jealousy will always whisper these three little words. It's not fair. It's not fair. It's not fair my coworker gets that promotion. It's not fair that they've had three healthy pregnancies. It's not fair that my sister still looks like she's 25. It's not fair. And at the end of the day, what everything in this culture is saying to us through advertising, through social media, through our own friend circles and family circles, everything is screaming to us. Really, it's not even a scream. It's more of a whisper. It's a subtle thing. It's these three words. It's not fair. And it brings about this comparison trap in our lives. And it's the first step in a cycle of destruction. The second step, the cycle continues with misplaced anger. Look at verse 8. So Saul hears this. He begins to compare. And then look at what it turns to in verse 8. Saul was very angry. This refrain, this cheer, displeased him greatly. They have credited David with tens of thousands, he thought, but me with only thousands. What more can he get but this kingdom? And from that time on, Saul kept a close eye on David. Saul was angry at David. And for some of us, this is how jealousy works. We wind up going to that next step. Because for some of us in the room, we have that one person, don't we? That one person that seems to have everything that we want. And because of that, they just kind of rub us the wrong way, right? It's almost like, you know, they have this. They haven't knowingly personally hurt you. But we just don't like being around them. And maybe we even isolate ourselves from them because we just don't want to be in their presence because they just seem to have it all together. The truth is, though, I want you to think about this. The truth is that anger that we feel towards that individual is oftentimes misplaced anger. And I want to kind of illustrate this in a little moment together. And I'm going to ask the three people that I've asked to volunteer to come on up, if you don't mind. Three volunteers. I want to give some things away this morning. I mean, it's Mother's Day, right? So maybe we should give something away this morning. So I've asked these three, out of all of you, I chose these three to get gifts this morning. So sorry about that, but these are the three that are getting their gifts. Thank y'all for being up here. I did tell them, I promised them they didn't have to say anything. So I want to give some gifts away. So first of all, I'd like for you to have this. Thank you for everything you do for your family and just awesome person. Thank you for even being in the choir. You're just a joy to have in our church. So go ahead and open your gift. We just want to say thank you for your gift. It's an apple. We just want to say thank you. It's actually not even a fresh apple. It's been sitting on my kitchen table for a few weeks. I think it's still good, but it's good. That's true. The boys hadn't bit out of it, so you're good to go. Miss Deb, I want to give you a gift as well. You just got back from London, so I was thinking to myself, maybe you could use something as well. So, yeah, go ahead and pull those out. You get two pieces of fruit instead. The only trade-off here, those two pieces of fruit are a little overripe, all right? So, but maybe if you eat them, like, in the next 30 seconds, they'll still be okay to eat. But thank you. Thank you both for just being incredible moms on Mother's Day, right? Like, it's awesome. Derek, I have a gold bag for you, buddy. It's a nice one. It's a good one. Go ahead and open up your bag, Derek. Oh, wow, $20. That seems cool, doesn't it? I mean, that's pretty awesome. You get $20. You stay there. You get fruit. So you don't have to say anything. Derek, you're not going to answer this question. You just stand there and look pretty with your 20. Who are you tempted, just point to them. Who are you tempted to be jealous of in this moment? Right? Next question. Who are you angry at? Exactly. Now, here's something I want us to think about. This is a silly little illustration, and it's only 20 because that's all that I can afford. But imagine if Derek had $100 or $1,000. At what level does the temptation to be jealous and anger kick in? Who knows? For you, it might be different. For you right now, you might be sitting there thinking, Jonathan didn't choose me. I had a 1 in 3 chance of getting a $20 bill this morning, and he didn't choose me. Thank you, guys. Y'all can sit down. Let's give him a hand for coming up. Y'all be careful going down the stairs. Those are yours.
Thank you.
You keep it. Yeah, it's good. Think about this for just a minute. We all know who we're tempted to be jealous of in that moment. But you know what's so weird? The anger of that, the frustration of that, was pointed to the right person. Why? Because I'm the gift giver. I'm the one responsible for giving them what I gave them. If all three of them had gotten fruit, it would have been fine, right? But they didn't just all get fruit. I, knowing what was in the bag, chose to give the bags out the way I did. And the one I gave the money to isn't even a mom. I chose this. And here's the thing. If they are dissatisfied and jealous with what they have, who should they be upset with? Me. Because I'm the gift giver. I'm the one that decided who got what. And yet, in real life, think about this in your own life. In real life, who do we blame and get angry at when we don't have? The object of our anger and jealousy is usually the person that has more than you. But it's misplaced. They are not the problem. What can they do to make you jealous, to not make you jealous anymore, except to fail, right? They can't do anything because they are not the problem or the correct person to go to with our jealousy and with our anger. We think that if they just had less and we had more, our jealousy would subside and our anger would subside towards them. But it's not true, because we're not going to the right person with our anger and with our hurt and with our jealousy and with our unfairness. We're going to the wrong person. God, think about this. God is responsible for what you have and what you don't have. He could have made you healthier. He could have made you smarter. He could have made you better looking. He could have made you more successful, more confident. He could have birthed you into a better family or provided you with wealth or better opportunities. God decides who gets what. He's the gift giver. So ultimately, I want us to think about this, and there's going to be a little tension when I say this. We're going to resolve it at the end. Ultimately, our problem is with God. But it comes out as a problem with others, a problem that they couldn't fix even if they wanted to. So we are left with this misplaced anger towards others about what they get and they have. Look at verse 10 with me. The next day, an evil spirit from God came forcefully on Saul. Now, there's an interesting thing going on here. There's some inner work going on and some outer work going on. Saul has opened the door to sin in his life, and God has sovereignly allowed not just his own undoing, God has sovereignly allowed outer evil forces to come against Saul. In fact, you'll see this again earlier in 1 Samuel 16. It's there as well. So Saul was prophesying, this just as a way to say he was publicly speaking, all right? He's speaking in his house while David was playing the harp, as he usually did. Saul had a spear in his hand, and he hurled it, saying to himself, "I'll pin David to the wall." But David eluded him twice. Now, we don't know if this is two separate occasions. In fact, something like this is going to happen later. We don't know if it's two separate occasions or if it's like two spears and David's just like, you know, we don't know. But what we know is this happened. The next cycle of jealousy, we go from unfair comparison to misplaced anger to ongoing resentment. Ongoing resentment. This inner desire for hurt to befall someone. Now, maybe you've never wanted to hurl a spear at someone, or maybe you have. In fact, a quarter of murders happen because of jealousy. A fourth of them happen because of jealousy. But it might not be physical violence that you're dreaming about or fantasizing about. It could be the secret celebration of someone's failure. You may celebrate when they lose their job. You may celebrate when they gain weight or see their kid have a meltdown. I'll be honest, like that's one for me, right? I've been at a birthday party before and I'm sitting here thinking, those kids are so perfect. And then that kid melts down and there's this inner moment. It's almost like you can't hold the smile. I'm sorry, buddy, I hate you're having a bad day. I mean, you're trying not to grin in that moment. And it's funny, but here's the truth. It's absolutely sinful. It's this ongoing resentment we have towards people. Often, even the words we use about others and gossip or criticizing someone behind their backs, you know what that is? A lot of times, it's a telltale sign that the person doing the criticizing, the person doing the gossip, it's a telltale sign that there's a part of them that's jealous of that other person. This is something that we face in our lives, and it perpetuates into the relationships we're in. The last step in this cycle is paranoid fear. Paranoid fear. Another word for this, you could maybe substitute the word insecurity here. Verse 12, it says this about Saul. Saul was afraid of David. The anger in verse 8 turns to fear. Because the Lord was with David, but had departed from Saul. So he sent David away from him. He's like, hey, I'm isolating myself from this relationship. and gave him command over 1,000 men. And David led the troops in their campaigns. So he's like, all right, I got to get this guy out of my life. He sends David away with 1,000 troops, which sounds like a big number, but it's actually a small number compared to the army of Israel. He's just thinking, I just got to get him out of here. You know, maybe he'll die on the battlefield. Maybe something will happen to him. I'm just getting him away from me because I can't handle this fear I have of this man. Verse 14, in everything he did, he had great success because the Lord was with him. When Saul saw how successful he was afraid of him. That's that word again. He was afraid of David. Jealousy brings about a constant fear within us that something sinister is at work against us, that they are purposely doing what they do and they are out to hurt you. And most of the time it's just paranoia because we're so jealous of them, because we're so angry with them, because we resent them, that every interaction we have with this person just starts that cycle all over again. Every time we get around them, we start comparing, we start feeling anger, we start building up resentment, and we start fearing them, and it becomes this vicious cycle with people. And for some of you, you've got that person. You might have several of those people that you are just on this little train, on this little cycle with them every time you get around them. And even when you're not around them, you're thinking about what they have that you don't have. It's paranoia. This paranoia and fear can damage relationships. Now, let me say this. In marriage, there needs to be accountability with your spouse, right? In fact, I'll just be real with you. My phone, my computer, my social accounts, my wife has access to every bit of that. She can pick up my phone at any point and look at anything that she wants on it, and that's just the accountability we've set up. I'm not talking about that. But some of us, even in our spousal relationships or our friend relationships, we're so paranoid and jealous that there's no trust, even though there's no cause or reason for that trust to be broken. And sometimes the jealousy you feel isn't even from the current relationship, but the effects of jealousy and paranoia from another relationship. We bring it into the next one. And this could be spouses, this could be friendships, this could be family members. The result of jealousy is alienation from others and despair in self. It's separating us relationally from other people, and it's despairing in ourselves and in our own current situation. Saul not only pushed David away, he pushed everyone away and out of his life. Later, Saul's going to try to kill his son. That same spear move he tried on David, he's going to try that on his own son. He slanders his wife, and at the end of his life, Saul's going to commit suicide. Thankfully, there are two examples shown in this very same chapter. An example of jealousy and an example of contentment. So let's go back to the first part of 1 Samuel 18, the first four verses that we didn't read on the front end. Let's read those together. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. Look at verse 3. And Jonathan made a covenant, with David because he loved him as himself. This is the start of a great friendship. Now, our culture has tried to, at times, to pervert this relationship. It's not there. This is a solid, godly camaraderie that these men have with one another. And from the start, David and Jonathan are friends, and they stay that way till the end. Why? I'll tell you why. Because Jonathan is a content person. He is a content person. Think back to when the people are singing about Saul's thousands and David's 10,000s. You know who's not in that song? Jonathan. He didn't even make the song. And what's crazy is Jonathan, from this point, has had more military experience, definitely more military experience than David, and maybe even more than Saul himself, because we read earlier that Saul would sometimes try to steal the glory of his own sons by battles. Out of these three, Jonathan's probably the more formidable warrior at this stage, and yet not a single lyric is written about Jonathan. And guess what? There's not a hint of jealousy within him. Verse 4, Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David, along with his tunic. He took his sword, gave him his sword, he gave him his bow, he gave him his belt. Who, I want you to think about this, who would be in line for the throne if David had not been anointed king? Jonathan, right? He's the son of the king. Who's in line for that? Jonathan is. But David's the one anointed. Everything Jonathan has here, the things that he gives him, represent his position in the kingdom. And Jonathan is handing over those things to him, not as just a nice gift to say, hey, you're a cool guy, here's some gifts. No, he's handing over his symbols of authority in the kingdom. He's recognizing who God has anointed to be the next king. Contentment is recognizing God's value in yourself and recognizing God's value in others. Jonathan can see David's value and he knows his own worth as well. Everything might not be fair. Here's the truth, guys. Everything in this world might not be fair. But in light of who God is, what do we really deserve? In light of the cross, here's the truth. God doesn't owe us anything. He doesn't owe us a single thing. Yet he gives us his most precious gift, his one and only son, a gold bag for each one of us who trust in Christ. Think about that. I just want you to do this for a minute. I don't want to take a lot of time for this, but I want you to just close your eyes for just a minute. We're not done yet, but I just want you to think about this. Think for just a moment about God's love for you. Just take this moment. For just a moment, think about God's love for you. The blessings he's given you. The fact that every one of us in here make more than $2 a day, more than half the world. The freedom to come into this place and worship. That's a blessing. His only son, redemption for those who choose to trust in him. The fact that if you do follow Jesus, you are considered a son or a daughter of God. You see, when you have a clear view of who you are in Christ, it's very hard to be jealous. So open your eyes. Just a few chapters over. A few chapters over in 1 Samuel 23. If you want to turn there, you can, or you can just listen. Either way, it's just right there, so it's not hard to turn there. 1 Samuel 23, you have another interaction with Jonathan. Verse 16 says this, Saul's son Jonathan went to David at Horesh and helped him find strength in God. Verse 17, don't be afraid, Jonathan said. My father Saul will not lay a hand on you. Listen to what he says. You will be king over Israel, and I will be second to you. Jonathan, or David, you're going to be the king over Israel, and I will be second to you. Contentment is remembering that there will always be others that have more than you and others that have less than you. Think about that. Jonathan recognized that David was just going to have more than him. He just recognized that. And that was perfectly okay with Jonathan. He was just fine being second. He was fine with that. You see, the lie of jealousy is, I think, if I could just have blank, if I could just have the power that he has or the looks that she has, if I could just have the prestige and the wealth that they have, if I could just have that, I won't be jealous anymore. But the thing is, if we're honest, we know the truth, right? The minute we get this, whatever this is, we want that. We've heard the phrase, the grass is greener somewhere else, right? It's always greener somewhere else. But Jonathan wasn't going to fall into that trap. He's a prince of Israel, so he had more than a lot of people. But you know what? He also knew there were some people, namely David, that had more than him, that were given more than him. And he was content with that. It's realizing that, guys. It's recognizing some people in life are going to have more than you. Some people in life are going to have less than you. And learning to just know that's okay. Paul's going to echo this in Philippians. The verse is here on the screens, Philippians 4. This is a famous verse. A lot of you guys know it. A lot of you have quoted it in different places. For I have learned to be content whatever the circumstances. I know what it is to be in need for others to have more than me. And I know what it is to have plenty, for me to have more than others. I have learned the secret of being content in any and every situation, whether well-fed or whether hungry, whether living in plenty or living in want. And this is the verse that we say all the time. I can do all things through Christ, through Him who gives me strength. We hear that all the time. But you know when the best time to quote that verse, you know when the best time to call that verse to remembrance? It's not on the ball field. It's not right before you take a test or before you jump out of a plane to go skydiving. It's fine if you want to do that. But you know the best time to say that line? It's when we find ourselves jealous and discontent. That's actually the true context of this passage, that it's through Christ's strength in us that we can choose contentment over jealousy, that we can choose not to go down the cycle of destruction that jealousy brings in our lives. Contentment is also celebrating privately the successes you have and publicly the successes others have. Contentment is celebrating privately the successes you have and publicly the successes others have. This is a good rule of thumb for us, right? It doesn't mean we can't celebrate our success. It doesn't mean we can't, you know, get some people together and wish ourselves happy birthday or someone wishes happy birthday. It's not talking necessarily about that. But does the entire world need to know? Does the entire world need to know all of your success? What is your motive? This is so convicting for me. What is your motive for promoting your success or your family's success? For showing everyone your vacation, your food, your parties, your promotions, your plans. What is your motivation behind posting that everywhere? For some of us, we might not even realize it, but for some of us, we are adding to the temptation of others to feel jealous about our lives. And some of us don't know that, and some of us, I hate to say it, in your heart of hearts, you actually know you're doing that. Because it feels good to have other people want what you have. So you can fight jealousy on your end that way. But it's not just our private successes in life. It's also the better thing. Like if we're going to choose one to do, the better thing to do is to publicly celebrate the success of others. Now this is going to seem counterintuitive, but that person that you're jealous of, that person that you feel envy towards, get close to them and begin to celebrate their success publicly. That sounds weird, I know. Some of you are like, well, what if I don't mean it? Should I still do it? Yeah. You know why? Because there's a lot of things that our heart doesn't want to do that if we would just discipline ourselves to do, God will bring our heart along. And a lot of times it's just speaking truth. Does your sister look good in that dress? Yeah. Okay, then tell her. Do you like your brother-in-law's new car? Yeah. Then tell him. It's celebrating publicly the success of others. This is how we bring contentment into our lives. It's strategically moving the focus off of yourself to find a greater purpose and deeper meaning to life than just chasing what everyone else has. The result of contentment is this: it's intimacy with others and it's joy in life. It's intimacy with others and it's joy in life. That the best relationships are formed and they're sustained when jealousy is absent from that relationship. Without contentment, we will live the jealous and joyless life. So where are you today? It's kind of funny when you start thinking about some of the illustrations, but it's a real problem. It's a real heart thing that some of us might not ever admit, but the signs are there, the symptoms are there. So I've got two personal questions I want you to think about. And you're going to write these notes down, but don't close up. Don't check out mentally. Stay with me, okay? Two personal questions for you to answer. First one is this: whose success do I have a difficult time celebrating? Whose success do I have a difficult time celebrating? Who is it that you view as a threat? Who is the person that every time something good is said about them, you have to counter it with something negative because you're threatened by them, because you're insecure about them, because you're jealous of what God's given them and He hasn't given you? Whose success do I have a difficult time celebrating? But the more inward question is this: who is going to define my worth? Who's going to define my worth? Am I going to let others and what they have define what I'm worth? Or am I going to let God define who I'm worth, what my worth is? For some of us, we're so angry at that other person, and we're pointing the finger at them, and we're fussing at them when they don't even control half the stuff that they get or have or gifted with. When really, our conversation isn't with them. Our conversation is with God, the gift giver. And it's going to Him and saying, Lord, I don't fully understand why this person has everything that I want and I don't have those things, but I'm going to trust You, Lord. I'm going to recognize that I have worth in You and begin to name off the blessings of God in Your life and to declare to Him, Lord, I know that my worth is found in You. It's not found in all of these other things I could be chasing. So where are you this morning? I'm going to ask you to stand to your feet. We're going to have some prayer partners up here at the front for just a moment with your heads bowed and your eyes closed. Where do you find yourself this morning? Are you in the jealous cycle right now with someone or with many? It's time to get out. It's time to be delivered from that. It's time to separate from that, to be more content in life. Wherever God has you, I want to invite you. The stairs are going to be open. You can come over here and kneel at the stairs. You can talk to one of our prayer partners and pray with them. But during this song, I want to invite you to just do what God would have you do. Whether that's there at your seat, whether that's here at the front, whatever God has for you. Lord, I thank You, Lord, that You are the ultimate person we find satisfaction in, the ultimate person we find contentment in. Lord, help us to be people that are content and find our worth in You, Jesus, not chasing all these other people's things and gifts. Father, help us to be like Jonathan, not me, Jonathan. Help us to be like the Jonathan in the Bible, a man who is content in who he is in You, Lord, and not to fall in the folly of Saul. Father, just do what You want to do in this moment. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's sing together.